Everyone, welcome to Girl Speak, a podcast series by Girl Museum, the first and only museum in the world dedicated to celebrating girlhood, bringing you a girl's eye view on arts, culture, and history. I'm your host, Nat Urban, Junior Girl. Today we'll be discussing a new Girl Museum exhibit, Queerness and Girlhood, The Interviews. Thanks for being with us. Let's get started. This project came out of the tension I was feeling between my own experience of girlhood and queerness, as someone raised a girl who later came to queerness and abandoned binary identity. This tension is being walked out in media, in politics, and in our daily lives. As a queer studies scholar, I wanted to know how we reconcile with girlhood as we break down traditional understandings of sex and gender. I decided to put together an interview series to build a breadth of stories and experiences, sending out an open call to Girl Museum's community for queer folks who have experienced girlhood, culminating in six wonderful interviews. Interviewees explored masculinity and femininity, intimate moments of girlhood, relationships between girls, coming of age, coming to queerness, and personal understandings of girlhood. I'm going to walk you through some of the highlights from these interviews, grounding these stories and helping us understand what they mean and why they matter. This first clip comes from my interview with Morgan, talking about her experience of close female friendship.
A really dark period of time because the person who I thought was like my closest friend decided she didn't want to be my friend. She broke up with me, and it honestly was one of the most painful like breakups I've ever experienced. I mean, it hurt more than like some romantic and sexual relationships I've had. And, you know, because again, it's just like you grow and you learn from each other, and you're, at least again, I grew up in a small town of about 10,000 people. Like, you know, our friends were parents, or they, you know, would see each other at the store. We go to church together. Like, it wasn't just about the girls. It was often about the families. Mm-hmm. Then their siblings went to school with my sister, or they were in my mom's religious ed class, or like, you know, it was just, an intertwining that's probably similar to when you know, really like date someone, you meet their family and their friends become your friends. And, you know, like you follow their people on social media and find out what they're up to. And then when those relationships end, it's like, where did all those other people go to? And that was a really hard thing. So I don't know. Like I said, it was just really like an emotional intimacy that like, these are the people I trust. These are the people I would like run in front of a bullet for. I mean, and you know, to some of them, that's still the way it is today. And I've been hurt by some that have not kept those connections, that long lasting lifelong relationship with someone, there's nothing that can really replicate that. And again, behind closed doors, it was like makeup, it was gossiping, it was like, what do you think it'd be like to be kissed? Or like, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes we'd be really bold and like, you know, like, oh, I wonder if he has a big penis. Like, we had no frame of reference. Like, we had no idea what any of that meant, but it was just like we were so grown up. Or like, you know, we'd watch a movie and like be like, what do you think that would be like? Or, you know, it was just sort of like the working through and like working through ideas and talking them through with someone that like, you know, those kind of like weird questions that we all have but we don't want to ask out loud because it's like, what a weirdo, you know. But like, I had my best friends to ask those questions to. Mm-hmm. So that was, got a little rambly at the end, but yeah, just like trying to figure out who we are and what we like and what we're into and what we want to do. And like, we could kind of try those identities on with each other in a way that I couldn't have done with a significant other. And even in a way I really couldn't like with my family. So
something that I love about this clip is, first of all, the way it puts female homosexual relationships in girlhood in alignment with dating relationships later in life. A lot of young queer girls come back to these relationships and realize that there may have been a romantic component of it that didn't have any language or any support to put to it. But also how it recognizes these relationships and these times of secrecy between girls as a place where you can be weird, as a place where you can try identities on, as a place that feels safe, as a place that feels authentic. And that was really exciting to me and really put a spark in my mind about what are we accessing when we access girlhood, especially what are we accessing in our relationships when we are accessing that relationship from a lens of girlhood. This next clip comes to us from my interview with Emily. What I was really excited about coming into Emily's interview was that they had said that there were times where they felt like they were wearing a girl costume. And I wanted to interrogate that. What does that mean? And also, what about it feels like a costume? Why does it not feel authentic, and why can we not escape it? What is holding us there?
And I was so frustrated with people telling me, no, you can only be one thing. You can only like one type of thing. You can't, like, it's unusual, you know, and that frustrated me so much. So, and just, I think a lot of those feelings had to do with how society treats femininity mm-hmm. in general. So I think being subjected at an early age to obvious misogyny, you know, made me feel like I don't want to be subjected to this.
Yeah.
And I knew that no matter what I do, I'm going to be subjected to this. So I guess like dressing a certain way to avoid catcalling and things like that it started to become a thing. But that type of treatment endured. So it kind of was like, well, I'm going to have to deal with this shit no matter what, no matter how many piercings I get, no matter how crazy I dye my hair. I remember guys on the street on my block would say, Barbie. And then I was like, I'm getting a septum ring. So, like, I was like, I want to look like a freak so nobody bothers me. And then they're just like, it Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
I was just like,
they find a new win.
It's just like, it doesn't matter. So then I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to wear whatever I want. And that was freeing in a way. So now as a, you know, I'm 34. I'd say around 5 years ago, I still felt like, oh, I'm kind of androgynous in general, like maybe my bone structure, just the way that I look, or I can be androgynous. And I liked that. And, but as I get older, I find myself clinging to my femininity and worrying about losing it, which is kind of strange. But then I think about like, I want to cosplay this male character. How can I do that?
You know? Yeah.
But also, you know, I haven't done any cosplays in many years, but, I enjoy the idea of being able to, you know, dress as cool guy character, but also as like extremely feminine characters and whatnot. But I feel like just my day to day going about life, I feel that I'm neutral
mm-hmm.
in general. I just feel like a neutral being, but I know that people perceive me as being very feminine. So it's kind of a strange back and forth.
I think this clip is a really great way of demonstrating how patriarchy encroaches on girlhood and the violence it can enact, even if it feels indirect. There's this shift because of the way that Emily has been talked to, from the way that they naturally look to kind of create changes in an attempt to be shocking, in an attempt to be unwanted or looked over by this attention, but quickly found that because they were being perceived as feminine, as girlish, there was no escape from that violence. And so as hard as that is, there's also this opening of, okay, if nothing is going to work, then I'm going to do whatever I want. And it opens it up to this space of play. And we even hear that in the discussion of cosplay, of how putting on a costume can be a great way to explore and try on new identities. Coming back to the last interview, this idea of being able to try things on, to experiment, is so crucial, so fundamental to this understanding that we're building. Now, we would be remiss to talk about girlhood without acknowledging its assumed opposite, boyhood. So I spoke to my trans masculine friend, Vic, about his own experience of girlhood and then his transition to boyhood and his understanding of those two things and what the rules placed upon girls are and the rules placed upon boys are, especially at a young age.
Like, there were a lot of things that kind of delayed my medical transition, delayed me, like, trying to breach the world of trans masculinity. And I think that, like, the hating yourself narrative was such a huge part of it, because I was like, I don't hate how I look. I don't hate my body. I don't hate the way that I was raised. I just don't want the next step of it. Like, this isn't the timeline that I want. Like, I don't think that I would be happy existing any other way. I think if I had been born, like, and raised as a boy, like a little cis boy, I would have had a fucking terrible time, because I feel like I would have been so much more restricted in how I could express myself. Mm. And what I would have been allowed to do. Like, because as a kid, like, my parents were fine with me doing contact sports. They were fine with me being in martial arts. Like, they wanted me to be able to protect myself. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I could also be figure skating, and I could paint my nails, and I could, you know, wear dresses and my little crop tops that I should be wearing at like 5 years old. But I wanted them because I wanted to be high femme, and I wanted to be kitchen. I wanted to be camp.
I love it.
And it's like that yeah. wouldn't have been granted to me if I was a little boy. And yeah, like this build that I have now, this is what I want. I cannot imagine having any other, you know, build. And like, genuinely, I get really emotional sometimes thinking about the girl that I grew up being, because like, she had some stuff to figure out, but she was trying real hard. And mm-hmm. like, I in the last couple of years have come to like really cherish my inner child and like try to nurture her and then, you know, also do right by the much more ambiguous, confused teen. But yeah, there's a singer, his name is Ezra something. Oh, it's either Ezra Michael. Mm-hmm. And he's got a song out that's called Girl Baby. And every single time I listen to that song, I cry, because like part of the chorus is girl baby means so much to me. And I was just like, oh my God. And like he has a bunch of other trans masculine people in the music video and everything. And I'm like, yeah, that girl baby does mean so much to me, because like she got me through some shit. And she gave me a world that, like I said, I would not have had otherwise. And like, I feel like that girlhood is so much a part of like queer men's spaces and like gay men's spaces, because I feel like a lot of them describe feeling like they were denied what is typically described as girlhood, you know, getting to play with dolls, getting to play with makeup, getting to, you know, have more freedom in how they dress and like wear pretty things and, you know, watch the mm-hmm. the pop divas and stuff like that. That's girlhood. All the stuff that they're describing is girlhood, and I'm glad that I got to experience that.
There is so much to say about this clip. One of my favorite things about it is the way that it acknowledges gender fluidity and the way that we might choose different identities or have different identities thrust upon us throughout our life, and that the person who experienced that is still a part of us. The person who was that is still a part of us, and that doesn't foreclose us from change, and it doesn't make those later changes in identity any less valid or real or important. They're all just different steps, and all of the people who you have been are still real people who existed. Along with that, I really, really love the way that Vic lays out boyhood and girlhood and points out that he wouldn't want to experience boyhood because of the baggage that is placed upon boyhood. And that's something that if you're interested in, I would go to the interview about Adrienne and compare Adrienne and Vic's interview and listen to what they have to say about their own trans identities and their understandings of the identities they were raised in. I think there's a world of information there, and I would hate to give you all the answers. So I definitely encourage listening to those two interviews next to each other and comparing and examining what they have to say and how it might challenge your own ideas of sex and gender and transgender identity.
I don't know. It just all never really like sat right with me, the way that people kind of referred to me in a feminine way as kind of like a, I don't know if diminutive is the right word, but like calling me a girl, calling me miss, calling me a lady, kind of just felt like an insult in a way. I don't really know how else to phrase this.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were thinking of me as less than because I was female, and that always really rubbed me the wrong way. And so I started insisting on people on calling me with gender neutral terms, using they them pronouns. And I know there's nothing inherently like negative about being female, about being feminine, but that's how it felt to me, especially in these contexts from these people. And so one day I was just like, okay, I reject these labels. You can respect my non-binary pronouns or you can get the fuck out.
Yeah, totally. I'm curious about the choice of the label demigirl. Kind of where does mm-hmm. that come from? Where's that choice to remain affiliated almost would be my choice of words there. Where does that come from?
I still present very femininely and engage in a lot of feminine things like dressing very like high femme, and I do feel tied to certain aspects of femininity, not necessarily in a girlish way per se, but the aspects of femininity that I feel more closely tied to are like the, I guess, like Black Widow, Jessica Rabbit type archetype. Yeah. Of like very high femme, cannon will kill you. So I do still feel tied to those aspects, but not all of them, I suppose.
Percy once again brings us to thinking about how patriarchy can encroach upon experiences and can encroach upon identities. And they bring us to think about how in girlhood, the referential idea of girl felt diminutive, felt dismissive by the people around them, that people saw them as less than because of the identity they inhabited. I asked them about their choice to quote unquote remain affiliated, and they told me about some of the female characters that they looked up to. And it brought me back to this idea of girl as costume, as almost an accessory to these greater personality traits, as something to carry with you and take the pieces that you like from it, but abandon things that don't. In this next clip, Andy is going to walk us through how they broke girlhood.
Yesterday, I wore all black head to toe, like a very long skirt and a turtleneck, and then I did my hair all funky, which is something I really wanted to do at 14 when I started Catholic high school. I thought that was the epitome of fashion. And so right now I've been thinking about like the awkward space between like the safety of like little girlhood and like the assurance of like big girlhood and like kind of the feeling about growing. Like I'm talking like 12 to 13, 14, 15, even girlhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that part of the reason that I've been thinking about that is because like I'm starting to feel like the role model I needed at that age, which is a interesting way to reconnect back to my girlhood that like could not have happened if I didn't kill off my experiences of being a girl, you know? And like, I just like, I think when you get to the other side of something, and when you get to the other side of something that you very intentionally broke, like, you get this really incredible opportunity to look back on it with, like, a lot of love and a lot of tenderness. And, like, for me, like, punk culture in particular is, like, inseparable from love, and, like, inseparable from, like, radical tenderness towards others. And, like, I just want to give every 12 to through 15-year-old girl out there who feels like she is outgrowing her body at a rapid speed just, like, the biggest hug. And, like, yeah, when I said earlier that I'm seeking peace, I think what I mean is I want to feel like all my actions are movements towards giving that hug. I think the first step of, like, breaking girlhood is understanding that, like, the quote-unquote safety and the quote-unquote security and preservedness that comes with being a girl in society is falsified. And that understanding that, like, this position of sacredness is not, is, like, dehumanizing, and, like, very intentionally so. It's this kind of, like, very, very soft way to tell someone that they are best sequestered. And, like, yeah, I think that the first step for me of breaking girlhood was realizing that it was too small and that it was built too small. I wasn't too big, it was too small. And that's just my experience. But I feel like it's very, very true to this, like, societal image of being a little girl. And then I think then there's the breaking, you know, then there's the pounding down of those walls and the breaking of it, as, like, a box where you have to sit. And then you're out of that box. And I think that there's, like, where I'm at right now is, like, there's some real joy in, like, being out of that box, doing the really hard work of breaking it, and then coming out the other side and being like, well, I am still, like, a beautiful feminine person. And, like, all the things I loved about myself as a girl are still true. They're just, like, free. I can just go wherever I want with that energy. And, like, yeah, so I feel like the process of breaking down girlhood is, like, you know, you rip through it, and then you come out the other side and it's not holding you back anymore. It's just there.
I love this clip because it walks us from being a young girl to the discomfort to the breaking. And I think that is, to me, what this project has built towards, is this understanding of, like, what does girlhood look like, and how does queerness come in to screw up the picture? And I think this breaking, this moment of breaking, is the queerness in it for me, is the moment of dissolving labels and this kind of killing of what heterosexism, what cisgendered identity, what these things have wrought us, and the ability to break them. And it's hard, and these walls feel big, but at the same time, we understand that these identities are man-made and that humans don't fit in boxes. And this game can be played with all kinds of identities, the box game. There's a famous exercise called the man box, where you put all of the things that we believe a man to be on the inside of the box, and all the things we believe to be untrue or, like, unmanly outside of the box. And what you end up with is an impossible picture of someone who could never exist, because it is impossible to be unfeeling. And all of these other impossible standards that we place upon certain gendered identities. Girlhood specifically tends to end up being a identity that people feel ownership over, that others feel entitled to. These are some common threads pulled from girlhood. And as we pull those threads out of girlhood and we pull them through the breaking, what we're left with is this understanding that the box was just a condensation of these ideals, right? This box was a condensation of pieces of identity, of pieces of who a person can be. And part of the breaking is the ability to come back and pick up a couple of the bricks that were important to you and say that these pieces of the wall meant something to me. These pieces of girlhood felt important to me. These pieces still speak to me. And the ability to put them in your pocket and keep moving is the queerness of girlhood. This trying on of identities, this realization that the world will see you as something, and the ability to just muscle out of it and break it to pieces. And then you get to do something really exciting, which is be your own creator. I don't want to speak a lot after the last clip because I think it really does a lot of speaking for itself. This clip comes from my interview with Adrienne, an incredible trans woman. And this clip is from the end of her interview when, after talking through her journey and her experiences, I finally got to ask her a beautiful question. What does it mean to be your own creator?
Yeah. What's it like to be your own creator?
It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. I have felt more alive than I've ever felt in my whole life. And my mental health has been better than it's ever been. It's really nice to be at a place where I don't feel like I am having to prove my existence anymore. On the gender front, on the job front, I have a career that I absolutely love. On the friendship front, I have friends where I actually feel like, these are my authentic friends. These are the people that I am connected to. I don't have to prove myself to them anymore, right? For the longest time, I felt like I have to prove myself in order to have friends. I have to demonstrate my value to these people. I no longer feel like that. I feel worthy. I feel worthy in my family. I feel worthy in my friendships. I feel worthy in my career. I help my clients, right? I can treat PTSD. I am a good therapist. And that's not me thinking I'm God. That's me thinking like, oh, I'm a healer. I can do this shit. That feels great. And all of that's connected to gender for me, because when I approach femininity, I approach it very intentionally. It's about compassion. It's about connection. It's about empathy. It's about showing up from those traditionally feminized roles of care and nurturance. And how do I embody that intentionally? Not just the forced into this box because the patriarchy says you have to be a servant to men and children and culture, but I choose to be a healer. Mm-hmm. And that's been very empowering. It's been very affirming gender-wise too. I think being my own creator has been really powerful as a trans person, as a trans woman, because I get to choose the pieces of gender that I like, and I get to leave everything else behind. If I want to paint my nails, I can. If I don't want to paint my nails, I don't have to. If I want to, if I want to do the emotional labor, I'll do it for the people that really matter. I'm not going to do it just because everybody expects me to slap on a smile and be nice all the time, right? It's been really nice. Again, I come back to that, I have no other language for it but aliveness. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was sleepwalking for the longest time, but to be at a point where you feel like your body is your own, people like you because of who you are, not who you're pretending to be. The work you do is meaningful and puts you in touch with your spiritual self. All of that's been really great. And I think that part of that is really coming into connection with, I get to choose my own gender. I get to choose my own authentic connection to myself and my body. And I don't have to choose what my culture gives to me. Because, to be honest with you, the culture, the options for gender that our culture gives people are terrible. Absolutely terrible. Like, they're all really, really bad. And that is my biggest wish, is that we could, as a society, get to the point where we are past patriarchy, where we're past gender, and people are able to be their authentic selves. Talk a lot about that self energy and internal family systems. That's the modality I use. I think a lot of people are looking for self energy, but they're finding it in gender. They're finding it in roles that are given to them. And the secret is no role is going to protect you. No role is going to keep you safe. No role is going to love you. You have to be in a place where you are creating your authentic self. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a beautiful gift that trans women, that trans people give our culture, is that you have to find your authenticity in some space of self-creation, not in a role that you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something that everybody can learn from. I think that that's why I think trans liberation is so important to our culture, because we have to get to a point where we are no longer spending so much energy and so much resources on forcing people into boxes, enforcing women into servitude, enforcing children into very violent, very narrow ways of being. And we can just let people live. So my wish is that that self-creation that I've had for myself, that everybody could experience that. Because I see cis people and I'm like, this is sad. On some level, this is sad. Because as much as I love cis womanhood, I also have a lot of problems with it, mm-hmm. as a feminist. And I have a lot, like, as much as mad as I am at cis men, I have a lot of, like, sympathy for them in the sense that, like, oh, you are in a box that you did not choose. And you are cut off from your emotions and you are cut off from authentic relationships. And it's really sad. Like, we could be humans. We could all be human beings. And trans people have access to that. And it's really sad to me when I see cis people deny that. So I think that's what self-creation means to me.
We once again see this idea of a breaking and how that can lead to a liberation of identity. I asked at the beginning, what are we looking to access when we are accessing a girlhood that is queered? And I think what we've learned is that when we queer something, there is a breaking. And the most important part of it isn't the breaking, it's the existence after. It's when those walls are gone and you are faced with the enormous world of possibilities of who you are and who you can be. And there, the queerness is the intentional picking up of what you would like to take with you on your journey. I haven't finished my thinking about this topic. The most wonderful thing about doing research is it's never done. There's always more to read. There's always more questions to ask. And I would love to leave you with some questions of your own. What do you access when you access girlhood? And if you don't think you've ever accessed girlhood, ask yourself why not. Why does that box and its pieces feel out of reach for you? Why are they off limits? I encourage everyone to think about what it could mean to be their own creator. And what it looks like to take things like your body and your gender and your expression in your own two hands and make something of them. It could be really exciting and artistic and beautiful and exciting. The rest of these interviews with full transcripts can be found on the exhibit page on the Girl Museum website. Thanks for joining us on Girl Speak. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe so that it is easier for you and others to find us. And you can always leave a lovely voice note. This podcast is produced by Girl Museum, an entirely online and volunteer-run museum dedicated to exploring and celebrating the art, history, and cultures of girls around the world, past and present. We are always open and free of charge. Head on over to girlmuseum.org to learn more. Our music is by Chan Av. Finally, please help support the future production of Girl Speak by visiting and becoming a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/girlmuseum. Thank you and have a wonderful day.